What's going on, guys? It's Josh Huggett back here again. You're listening to the Vegucated podcast, which is a podcast that I've created to help educate others on veganism, vegan topics, activists, news stories, discussions, pretty much anything plant-based that you can think of, I'll be discussing on here. We've had a couple of good episodes so far, had some really positive feedback, so thank you for all of that. This podcast is based on an activist named Gary Yourofsky, which you can tell because it's in the title. Gary Yourofsky is a big hero of mine, seems as he is the man that turned me vegan, so I have a lot to thank him for. He's done some pretty shitty things post that. Some of the stuff he says is a bit hit neither here nor there. But yeah, he's a good bloke in my mind. But he has retired from all things activism. He retired in March of last year, 2017. It was only just brought to my attention then. So we're gonna discuss it. Got a little bit of history on him, a little bit of history on his speech, which is the speech that turned me vegan, which if you haven't listened to, I highly suggest that you do. If you type in like Gary Yourofsky best speech ever or something on YouTube, I'm sure it'll come up. It goes for about an hour. It turned me vegan overnight. A little bit about my vegan journey, very briefly. I was on and off vegetarian for quite a few years when I was younger. And then one day at the age of 19 or 20, a friend sent me the link to this video. I watched it at the start of the video, I was still a meat eater, and by the time the movie had finished, I had already decided that I was going to be vegan, and that was 7-ish years ago, maybe, around then. I don't have a date that I went vegan, I can't remember when it was, so it's always a bit of a guess. But, nonetheless, let's get on with the podcast. You don't want to hear me rambling. You want to hear me rambling about a proper topic. So, Gary Yourofsky was born on August 19, 1970. He is an American animal rights activist and lecturer who's had a major influence on contemporary veganism. Yourofsky was sponsored by PETA between the years of 2002 and 2005 and has given many public lectures promoting veganism. In 2010, Yourofsky's Yourofsky's popularity quickly accelerated around the world, especially in Israel, following the release of his YouTube video of him giving a speech at the Georgia Institute of Technology. As the video gained millions of views and has been translated into tens of different languages, Yourofsky has been admired by many and criticized by others for his alleged extreme views. One thing Gary does is he's very literal with the things that he's saying, which seems to anger human rights activists. And yeah, he does a lot of comparison between human suffering and animal suffering on the basis that we are all equals. We all feel the same pain. We have the same emotions. He does a lot of cross referencing within his speech and his activism in a whole. So that causes a bit of anger. He's been arrested 13 times between the years of 1997 and 2001. He spent 77 days in a Canadian maximum security prison in 1999 after raiding a fur farm in Canada and releasing 1,542 minks. He's also permanently banned from entering the UK. So a little bit of the early years of Gary Yourofsky. In 1996, he founded Animals Deserve Absolute Protection Today and Tomorrow, ADAPT, a vegan organization opposed to the usage of animals. By 2001, the organization had around 2,200 members. On March 30, 1997, Yourofsky, alongside four members of the Animal Liberation Front, raided an episode on the Animal Liberation Front earlier, so you can go back and have a listen to that. Raided a fur farm in Blenheim, Ontario, Canada, and released 1,542 mink, who were to be killed for their fur. The raid reportedly caused an estimated $500,000 Canadian dollars to the farm. He was arrested, tried, and sentenced to 6 months in a Canadian maximum security prison in 1997. Out of the 6 months, Yurovsky spent 77 days in prison. The experience affected Yurovsky, who said he was no more than an animal in the zoo. It wasn't pleasant, and that it reinforced his empathy and understanding of what these animals go through. Which is true. If you think about prisons, it's literally how caged animals feel. That's what we do. We lock them up for 23 hours a day before we take them out and play with them, or, you know, let them have a run. So it would very much reinstate those feelings. In the fall of 2000, Yurovsky received $10,000 from PETA to fund the broadcasting of a commercial against the animal slavery enterprise known as the Circus. The commercial was broadcasted 69 times on the local television. In 2001, Yurovsky began facing financial problems such as credit card debt to the sum of 30,000 United States dollars that curated his activism for 3 months of 2001. So he didn't have an income. He was getting paid by credit cards, essentially. 2002 to 2005. In the early 2002, Yurovsky resigned as president of ADAPT due to financial troubles. A day after sending his resignation letter, he received a telephone call from Ingrid Newkirk, who is someone else that we will be doing a podcast on, the president of PETA, who offered him a job. Employment negotiations between the two concluded on May 20, 2002, with Yurovsky being made the organization's official national lecturer. In 2002, Yurovsky told a reporter that he would unequivocally support the death of medical researchers in ALF-related arson fires. There's a pretty effed up quote, which I think I've got written in this script, about how he supports the killing of people in... So there was a bunch of Animal Liberation Front activists burning down like medical research facilities and stuff, and I think someone might have died, and he said that he supported it, which is, you know... In 2003, a Yurovsky lecture at the East Tennessee State University was cancelled as a result of an altercation. A faculty member had placed a stack of pamphlets in support of animal testing on a car outside the lecture room. After Yurovsky saw the pamphlets, heated words exchanged. Yurovsky grabbed the car and propelled it, causing the pamphlets to scatter across the floor. The lecture was cancelled and Yurovsky left the building. Yurovsky was invited to give a talk on ethical veganism to a class at the University of Southern Indiana on April 2, 2007. The university handbook contained a provision that outside speakers must not advocate violation of any federal or state law. And a professor at the university presented material from Yurovsky's website that he found to be infringing that policy to the university provost, resulting in the cancellation of Yurovsky's talk. After objections from free speech advocates at the school, the policy was revised and Yurovsky gave his talk. Part of Yurovsky's well-known speech on veganism was featured in the 2012 anti-speciesism movie The Superior Human. It's got a question mark on the end, so I think it's a question. Yurovsky visited Israel in September 2002 and was interviewed by Israeli television channel 2. Lectures scheduled for Yurovsky in public schools were cancelled by the Israeli Ministry of Education. Nobel Prize laureate J.M. Cozzetti commented, this is a quote, "Children are naturally sensitive. They can easily be shocked and disturbed by spectacles of gross cruelty. It is therefore understandable that education authorities in Israel should be reluctant to allow animal advocates like Mr. Yurovsky access to the classroom. On the other hand, there is the argument to be made that the treatment of animals by the food industry is so excessively heartless and such an affront to natural justice that we who, by our silence, tactically consent to those outrages outrages, God, Josh, come on, deserve to be shocked out of our sleep. In the long run, Mr. Yourofsky may well be doing us a larger moral service by confronting us, including the most sensitive of us, by the spectacle of the crimes we participate in. Yourofsky's website states that he has given 2,300... What is that beeping noise? Hang on. Sorry about that. I have no idea what actually just happened. My laptop started beeping and then just shut down, so I didn't actually have anything to read. But yeah, so that's a little bit of the beginning of Gary Yourofsky, kind of leading us up to where we are now. He left actual activism and moved on to more of like a internet-based activism in... I think it says it in here, 2014-ish, I think. But this is his... So this is some of the... One of the posts on his Facebook of him retiring. So he... I don't know, I was reading it. It seems pretty interesting. I think if you know Gary Yourofsky, you'll find this quite interesting. If you don't, I think you will still find it interesting because that's the point of the podcast. But you'll also learn about some of the stuff that he did. But yeah, so we're going to have a read through it now. Buckle up. And yeah, this is it. This was posted on March 30, 2017. To all the people I've converted and all the activists I've inspired to do more, please continue to enlighten as many people as you possibly can. My tank is completely empty, so I will no longer be online or active in any capacity. Allow me to explain my situation in the simplest way. Last year, Kobe Bryant and Peyton Manning retired after 18 years. They didn't hang it up because they wanted to. Their worn-out bodies wouldn't let them continue. Unfortunately, after 18 years of face-to-face activism from 1996 to 2014 and a brief online stint for the last 2 years, my worn-out mind, which is an integral part of the body, won't allow me to continue either. I no longer possess the patience or the precision to teach. So, before I end up like Michael Jordan in a Washington Wizards uniform, it's time for me to fly. FYI, when I became fully active in 96, I was simply fulfilling a promise made to a chained elephant at the Shrine Circus. That is why I took part in hundreds of demonstrations and several acts of civil disobedience and direct action from 1996 to 2001. Resulting in 13 arrests, including the 97 animal concentration camp raid in Blenheim, Ontario. That there is a prime example of him using trigger words to invoke emotion in the people that he's speaking to, using words like the concentration camp. Obviously strikes a nerve with most people, and he uses that in a way to start conversations about animal activism and the comparison between animal suffering and human suffering. So there's a few of those in this. But then, after realizing that pure education was the most effective form of activism, I hit the road from 2002 to 2014 for 7.5 months a year, traveling to 30 states, giving 2,660 lectures at 186 schools to 60,000 non-vegan students in ethics, compassion, philosophy, women's studies, public policy, nutrition, and sociology classes. And I never once charged schools / professors to bring me in because the truth should always be free. A few generous donors covered my traveling expenses and helped me pay my bills. So yeah, he never charges for any of his speeches that he did. He traveled around for years. He always said that they would be free, which is quite noble. You know, he got a slight pay from Peter, which I read in a Q&A or I saw it in a video. He didn't earn that much, but, you know, enough to get by. And what about this startling quote I discovered from 2003 Toledo Blade newspaper I discovered from a 2003 Toledo Blade newspaper article after I gave 8 lectures in one day, the most ever, at a rural high school in Ohio. After the class, I had a conversation with a student who killed pigs on his family property. I later told reporter Jack Lessenberry, I remember thinking, here I am with Greg the pig farmer, and I don't want anything bad to happen to this guy. So he used to be a compassionate man, he used to have compassion for humans and animals, and slowly, it happens with everybody, over time, you get worn out, just dealing with people's shit over and over and over again. Fast forward to 2017, and it's pretty obvious that the struggle took its toll on me, especially when the majority of the animal rights movement, apologists, pacifists, intersectionalists, is more concerned about offending oppressed humans instead of demanding an end to their oppressive hypocrisy. If people are willingly participating in the animal holocaust, they've gone from victim to victimizer, since they're unequivocally denying animals the same rights of life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness that they are demanding / receiving. So this is when he gets into Gary, where he's actually using lots of trigger words, and he's a very much animal liberation, animal rights, rather than, you know, plant-based living, etc., etc. But I didn't become an animal liberationist to have the realitory quarrels with misguided apologist, pacifist, intersectionalist vegans, which is 1,000 times more draining than dealing with carnists. True. Besides obsessing about their own image and narcissistically making sure there's an imaginary halo over their head at all times, their main form of activism is attacking anyone who doesn't worship at the altar of humanity, especially if they refuse to do yoga sun salutes on the beach before exchanging energy hugs with unbathed hippies in a Woodstock-like drum circle gathering of uselessness. Very, very strong words. Since I've always been willing to share my uncensored feelings, I must clarify and correct a few things before signing off. So this is the part of the post where he... So I'm reading this off the Adapt website. So this is part of the post where he's talking about some of the stuff he's said in the past, and he's addressing it and just kind of trying to fix the issues. Number one, since humanity thrives on abuse, discrimination, and injustice 24/7, I no longer believe veganism can reduce or eliminate the depraved things we do to each other. From teenage mothers throwing their unwanted newborn babies in the trash, and parents physically or mentally abusing their own kids, to men raping women and children, domestic abuse, sweatshops, the diamond industry, racism, sexism, heterosexism, classism, and endless religious wars, we are the nastiest, filthiest, deadliest, parasitic organisms to ever infect the universe. Very true. Fortunately, vegan lifestyles weren't created for us. They exist to reduce and eliminate the depraved things we do to animals and the environment. So the end of speciesism must continue. Number two, in the I-24 Israeli video, I said there were no vegan rapists in the prisons of the world. I never should have. If you haven't seen his interview in Israel only a couple of years ago, I highly, highly suggest you watch it. It makes the news reporter incredibly uncomfortable with the words that he used, especially for Israel, where everything's a bit more, God, I don't really know the word to explain it, but it's a lot more Israel, and he very much isn't Israel. I never should have made that statement, because men, whether atheist, religious, Democrat, Republican, anarchist, white, black, Asian, Latino, pro-life, pro-choice, pro-gun, anti-gun, etc., will sadistically continue to rape women and children no matter what lifestyle they follow. So I fully retract that statement. I also said that new vegans should wear out their old cow skin shoes, since the damage had already been done. I no longer recommend that because using slash wearing animal skin is always obscene, whether the items are old or new. If you discovered that your old shoes were made of dog skin or Jew skin, you wouldn't create an excuse to ignore those victims, so why create one when the cows are the victims? Throw animal skin products in the trash where they belong. I also accidentally said that 50% of Nike shoes were made of synthetic leather. That is not accurate. When she asked the question, my mind was hollering, talk about the many vegan-friendly shoe companies like New Balance or Converse. And then that old stat from Nike popped into my head. And it all got jumbled up and came out wrong. Ugh, I'm sorry. But when one speaks publicly as much as I do, it's impossible not to make mistakes. Number 3. In the Human Rights Hypocrites video, I said Palestinians were the craziest group of people on the planet. That is not true. I unequivocally take that back. The apologist, pacifist, intersectionalist vegan is the... I'd only skimmed this before. I take that back. The apologist, pacifist, intersectionalist vegan community is the craziest by far. Just let that simmer. Then it's all the non-vegan oppressed humans. Blacks, oh my God, I can't believe I'm reading this. Blacks, women, LGBT, Palestinians, Jews, Hispanics, etc. And non-vegan human rights activists, because they're proudly supporting the rape, baby stealing, enslavement, and murder of animals, unequivocally denying them the same rights of life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness that they're demanding slash receiving. Plus, if these hypocrites ever became vegan, they'd simply morph into the first group of self-righteous, humans-first, animal-laughed lunatics. Basically, everyone else is next, with non-apologist, non-pacifist, non-intersexualist vegans bringing up the rear because we are the last... We are the least destructive slash hypocritical. Concerning my misanthropy, Malcolm X once said, you can't be anti-slavery and You can't be anti-slavery and pro-slave master. So, even though I empathize with certain groups when they battle others, LGBTs over straights, blacks over whites, women over men, I no longer care about oppressed humans because they don't care about the animals they endlessly oppress on a daily basis. With this being said, I will not tolerate defamatory charges of racism or supporting rape or whatever other slur the apologist, pacifist, intersectionalist vegan community wants to manufacture. And for the record, being a misanthrope, am I pronouncing that right? Misanthrope doesn't mean I hate individuals necessarily. It means I collectively despise humanity because we are toxic to everything that exists. So spare me the Pee Wee Herman-like retort of, Gary, since you hate humans, therefore you must hate yourself too. I still say it's absurd that people discuss my non-harmful enmity. Will another argument ensue as I now reveal that I hate the Who more than the Rolling Stones and Star Wars more than James Bond movies, even though I despise all four? Oi, okay. I don't think he meant that he hates Star Wars. I think that must be a typo. So yeah, that's a very powerful is definitely one word to describe that. Offensive is another. Unneeded, probably. Interesting, definitely. So yeah, if as you can tell, this is why he was gathering so much hate and probably why he burnt himself out, because he is very much stuck in a early veganism kind of activism. I remember when I first went vegan, there was like you used to use the Holocaust, you used to use these other terms, you used to use slave, you used rape a lot, you use these terms without really thinking about the consequences that you were having on other people. You use these terms because it's in the human world, that's what it is. And you use it, but you never really thought about how it would affect somebody else that had been through it. You know, like a rape victim, a Jew. So yeah, I'm guilty myself of using those terms. I no longer use them. I don't really get into many anti meat eating arguments anymore. I've kind of stepped back. I burnt myself out. I haven't been vegan as long as him, but I used to do lots of arguing. I used to do lots of this, back and forth debating, and it does. It takes its toll. It really burns you out. But yeah, I am guilty of using those terms. I no longer use them, and I refrained from using them in my later debates. But yes. All right, number four. In my Georgia Tech speech, I referred to eggs as hen periods. Most are still unaware that this was a Comedy Central roast-like joke. Remember, I was influenced by comedy, George Carlin, as much as militancy with Malcolm X. Since birds don't menstruate, eggs are technically not part of their period. But it's still an entertaining line to use when roasting carnists so that they need to eliminate it from your repertoire. Oh, sorry, there's no need to eliminate it from your repertoire. In my 2014 excuses speech, with scientifically accurate humor, I explained that if people perpetually crave and consume objects, such as eggs, that came out of a bird's cloaca, which is the poop hole, pee hole, vaginal fluid hole, and egg hole all in one, and cook stuffing inside of a turkey's ass so it can marinate in shit particles during the baking process, then humans have a big ass bestial scat fetish for bird ass. I'm going to read that sentence again. I explained that if people perpetually crave and consume objects that came out of a bird's cloaca, which is the poo hole, pee hole, vaginal fluid hole, and egg hole all in one, and cook stuffing inside of a turkey's ass so it can marinate in shit particles during the baking process, then humans have a big ass bestial scat fetish for bird ass. That's a sentence. That is interesting. That sentence has literally rendered me speechless. I speak all day and I talk for a living, and I don't know what to say about that sentence. Toss in the consumption of breasts, legs, and thighs, and squeezing cow nipples to extract milk for cereal, cheese, and pastries, and it's a bestiality ball at every meal. By the way, I was recently watching reruns of Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show. Jennifer Aniston and Steve Harvey showed up to play Pictionary because Fallon loves playing goofy games. Aniston had to draw a picture so Harvey would guess the phrase, "Holy cow." She drew the body of an animal that appeared to be a cow. When Harvey instead said sheep, goat, Aniston drew udders under as a hint. I'd immediately realized that if people wanted to depict cows in a drawing but didn't possess Andy Warhol skills, cows would be the only animals where nipples could be drawn to describe them, because humanity's favorite pastime has always been stroking cow nipples to extract secretions. I also need to give some well-deserved shout-outs to a few people that helped me along the way. Activist Hilma Ruby, who never received enough credit for her role in the Otorio mink raid, where we were the only ones out of five who stood true to the cause by refusing to cooperate with authorities and never apologising to the court or the mink killers for giving 1,542 animals a chance at freedom. To activist Jason Bayless, who created the "If it's not good enough for your eyes, why is it good enough for your stomach?" line that I used before showing slaughterhouse videos. We were hanging with the same crowd in 2002 when he suggested adding it to the speech because it worked during his tabling events. To chef/wellness expert Jason Roble, who edited a few of my essays over the years, came up with the arse bread zinger in the Georgia Tech speech and travelled with me for a few years during the lecture tour to make the road less unbearable. He was also the only person who could almost eat as much food as I do in one sitting. And then he goes on and he thanks a whole bunch of other people, which you can read at your own leisure if you want to go to his website. It's adapt.org, ADAPTT.org. And you can read all of the thank yous if you would like to. And a huge, massive shout out to those who fight for animal liberation and only... Oh my God. Those who fight for animal liberation only and have always used my activism as a tool to further the cause, because it is now your job to find people who are thirsting for knowledge, who aren't comfortably numb with all the cruelty, and edify them. If everyone did their part and converted 10, 100, 1,000 or more, a vegan world would be in reach. Just speak for the animals like you would want to be spoken for if you were in their position, and always follow your heart when it comes to activism. Stop thinking of ideas when you can put those ideas into action instead. Please stop having meetings and conferences, because you will only end up discussing these meetings at the next conference before scheduling another conference to debate and discuss the previous meetings before having another discussion to debate the meetings scheduled for the next conference, and so on. In my prime, I was a man of action who lived by the adage that if you wanted something done right, then you actually have to do it, and do it yourself. You should live by that adage too. Put those tears, all that anger, all that knowledge into action. You'd be amazed with the results. Unfortunately, you will discover that enlightenment is bittersweet. Seeing the truth, knowing the truth, and living the truth is wonderful, but realizing how evil our family, friends, and species are is maddening. Just keep opening the eyes of as many people as you can for as long as you can, so one day you too can say, tag, you're it, to a bunch of people you've influenced. And that is the end of that article, which... That's my second time reading it, and it's still, some of those words just blow me away. But then, you know, that's what he based all of his activism off of, which is if he wasn't actually out there saving animals. I remember he chained himself to a store that sells fur, I believe. That he was very in your face, very upfront, very animal driven, which you don't really see that much of anymore, because everybody... You know, we're starting to care more about other people, you know. I'm not really sure. This is why I want to get another activist on the line. I want to talk to somebody. If you're out there and you're listening to this and you want to talk about activism, let me know. Send me a message. Come on, we can talk about where it came from, where it's going, different types of activism. You know, we can talk about it. People can hear it. Get some more activists out there. Because it seems to be dwindling, you know, numbers are... the ban live export marches and stuff, they're growing, but you also see people, you know, having ban live export stickers on the back of their car but eating a hamburger or a hot dog, so they're not really getting the vegan message. They're more of like a, you know, treat animals better before you kill them kind of thing, instead of actually treating them properly all the way, or just abstaining from hurting them in general. But yeah, that's the end of this one. Thank you very much for listening. My name's been Josh Huggett. This is the Vegucated Podcast. If you do like this, if you like the idea, if you're liking the vegan talk, let me know by hitting the subscribe button. That way when I do post podcasts, they come up on your Apple or wherever you're listening. If you listen through Anchor, if you just go to our Anchor website, you can subscribe on pretty much any platform that you like. So yeah, please subscribe, that way I don't need to keep spamming it in all of the vegan groups, because I'm pretty sure you're all getting very annoyed with that. But, as always, my name's been Josh Huggett. Josh Huggett? I don't even know my own name. My name's been Josh Huggett. You've been listening to the Vegucated Podcast. Good night.